Hey guys, how you doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness. And welcome to episode 20, I believe, of the 30 Plus Men's Fitness podcast. We've really had some really great guests on this year. And in recent times, we've switched a little bit from nutrition to fitness to more mindset. And even had a happiness coach on recently where we were looking at things like meditation. And today, guys, I'm really chuffed because I've got quite a coup. I reached out to this guy last week on Facebook when he announced it was his birthday. And I just said, hey, I love your stuff. Would you be interested in coming on 30 Plus Men's Fitness Podcast? And a couple of emails later, he's agreed to come on. I'm really chuffed to be sat, well, virtually with the owner, CEO of Body Power, Mr. Nick Orton. How are you, Nick?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for inviting me on.
No, I really appreciate it. Like I've just said before we started recording, I know you're a very, very busy man. You're so busy, I can't even fathom it. So
you've done well to tie me down.
Yeah. No,
really, but as you said, you got me on my birthday, so it was great timing.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, so Nick, we're going to get into it. I know you're on a tight schedule. We've got 45 minutes, so let's not beat around the bush. We've got 45 minutes to give these guys as much value as possible. For guys that don't know you, they don't know what Body Power is, tell us a little bit about yourself and what is it you exactly that you do.
Okay, well, Body Power is, I guess the best way to describe it is a fitness lifestyle brand. We are in 29 countries. We have over 3,000 staff. And, you know, the business has grown from, nothing to having major expos. I mean, in the UK, we have Body Power Expo at the UK at the NEC, which is a very large expo. We've also got gyms. We have our nutrition products in Asia. We do lots of online training. We do clothing, you know, anything to do with fitness along the Body Power brand. Yep. is good for us, really. And like I say, started from zero and had a lot of people saying, you know, this is something that's not going to work, which is going to be a story that I'm sure lots of other people can empathize with. So I'm way over 30. So
yeah.
I was my 48th birthday, actually, when you contacted me, Mark.
I've got lots of clients in their 40s and 50s, buddy, so you fit the bill lovely.
Good, good. Well, I'm feeling fit. I had a bit of an unwell spell a few weeks back, but I'm feeling fit now. And I'm, I'm lucky enough now to be travelling all around the globe. I'm off to India tomorrow, as I was saying to you earlier, to see the team there, to do some seminars there. So, it's been a roller coaster ride for the last, it's about 10 years since I started Body Power.
Sure.
And before that, I did a whole load of other things as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Like I said to you before we started recording, as I was doing my power walk into the gym the other day, I listened to you on Jamie Alderton, who I've got quite friendly with on his podcast, and it really fired me up because, you know, coming, you're a businessman, you're 10 years older than me, you achieved great things. I was like really fired up, and I was on the phone to my investors saying, wow, you've got to listen to this podcast, how this guy's built this business, it's amazing. So I'm always really interested to see where the whole journey began. So this is going to be more today, guys, about growing a business, really, sort of Nick's rise and how he actually took this idea and turned Body Power into the what it is today. So you tell a great story on Jamie's podcast about how you used to make money as a kid and, you know, your entrepreneurial side was already with you. Remind me a lot of myself. You know, I was organizing sort of events at 16 and things like that. Let's go right back, Nick, and talk about where it really all started for you in business.
Well, I think, for me personally, I've always known that I'm an entrepreneur. I've always been interested in business. I guess, you know, at my heart, I'm a salesman. I love the challenge of selling something. And so, you know, when I was really young, I started cleaning carpets, you know, washing cars. I was always coming up with different ideas. So, for example, you know, and I was only about, I must have been about 12, I think, when I came up with a concept of delivering pet food to homes. And at the time when I suggested that, it wasn't being done at all. It just so happened that I was just too young to make it happen.
And, sure.
You know, obviously it became very, very big business. I wish I'd been a few years older, really, because I think I would have been able to capitalize on that a bit more. But I know that I've got a creative side, and I know that I enjoy coming up with ideas for business. And because I'm an opportunist, I like to, you know, do something about it. So, you know, when I come up with something, I'll often try and make it work, of course. And what I find is that most people, not most people, but lots and lots of people come up with lots of ideas. It's just that the difference between me and yourself, I guess, and lots of other people, is that actually when we get an idea, we see it through. You know, we actually think, right, do you know what, we're going to do something about this. And I think if more people that got ideas actually had the courage of their conviction and actually saw it through, we'd see a lot more entrepreneurs being successful, that's for sure.
I really like that. It's because I think you mentioned before, you can read all these books and they fire you up, but unless you actually take action, you know, nothing's going to happen. And there's this really great quote from Napoleon Hill that I've listened to a lot as I do my power walks. And he says, you know, success is the progressive realization of a worthwhile idea. And it's so true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think it's fascinating, really, that people, lots of people don't really then take their ideas forward. It might be because lots of people fear failure.
Sure.
And, you know, my approach is that if I come up with 10 ideas, I'm only expecting, you know, I want them all to work, obviously. But, you know, the reality is probably 2-3 are going to work.
Yeah.
And what I'm always trying to do is look for the big one. You know, I'm looking for something that's going to be a blockbuster.
Sure.
When I was young, I had lots of different ideas that I started, and you know, it saw me through university. I didn't have a grant or anything like that, so I had to fund myself. And I mean, I was telling this story, probably heard it on Jamie's, where you know, I was making Sunday roasts for people in my hall of residence.
What a concept! It was so simple, but you know, all these people hung over on a Sunday that can't be bothered to move, and you come up with the idea of just cooking them dinner.
Absolutely. And do you know that I was quite a weird student because I didn't drink. I've been teetotal pretty much the whole of my life. So it was a real benefit because I wasn't one of the people that was hungover. So I was in a great position to be able to cook people food.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that it just saw me through university. And in fact, I made so much money from that. I bought myself a couple of classic cars while I was a student.
Brilliant.
And had a good time of it. Yeah. So, you know, it was well worth doing. And I then left uni, and what I wanted to do was I wanted to get skills from a much bigger company because I knew that I wanted to start my own business, of course. I wasn't quite sure what it was going to be, if I'm honest. I just knew that I wanted to sell something and that I'd got a deep interest because of some family ties in medical and health. And not really fitness at the time, but I looked for the pharmaceutical industry, and I mean, it is very different now in the pharma industry, but at the time, you know, being a medical rep was a good, well-paid job, and I went for the job and got it. And I worked for a company called Astra Pharmaceutical, now AstraZeneca, and just did well with them, took on board all the training. And then I left that to start a consultancy group because there was a bit of luck involved in it, but it's about using the position that you're in and the opportunity you find yourself in and creating a business out of it. So for me, it was there were big changes going on in the NHS. So it was the first time that pharmaceutical consultants had been around. And I don't know how much you know about the NHS, but, you know, back in the 90s, this role didn't exist, and they came about, and just so happened that my position in Astra Pharmaceutical meant that I knew all these guys. So I left, and it was a well-paid job that I was in with Astra, but I left much to the disgust of my wife, actually, because she was pregnant with our first child, so it was real.
So how old were you at the time, Nick, just so we can get an idea?
That's a good question. I was in my 20s.
Cool.
So late 20s I would have been.
Child on the way,
And real bad timing, but I knew it was the right thing for me to do. I just knew. something inside me said, I'm going to do this. And so I left. I started this consultancy group up, and I could, because I knew these pharmaceutical consultants, I started to bring them together in meetings. And first of all, I was just bringing it together as like brainstorms. It seemed to go down really well. Then I started to get sponsors on board to say, look, I've got all these influential people around in this room. Come and sponsor it. And that actually just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And from that, I launched the pharmacy show at the NEC.
Wow.
So it just, it was a big, big step because, I mean, it took me ages to get a tenancy agreement at the right. NEC. They're very particular at the best of times. But, you know, I was in my 20s and I went to the NEC and said, look, this is what I want to do. And it was a major financial risk for me.
Really?
Yeah, really big because it's very expensive to hire horses at the NEC. Yeah. And I didn't have any sponsors at all at the time. I had some good links. And then I had a year to pull this major show off.
Sure.
And I'm cutting a long story short because basically that show worked. And from that, I developed the business so that I'd got a big trade show business.
Wow.
And I got some crazy things to try and, I mean, not that I would particularly recommend people to do this, but, you know, I needed to raise money because I had a huge cash flow issue.
Sure.
I was getting interest from sponsors, but I got lots of outgoings. And I'd got a cash flow worked out, which is critical for anyone starting a business.
Yeah,
you know, you've
yeah.
got to budget. But one thing I hadn't really worked out was how I was going to fund it.
Wow.
And it sounds a bit remiss to say it now, but, you know, I was so confident that I was going to be able to pull this off that I did it anyway. And I borrowed a lot of money to be able to pull this
wow.
off. But some of the stupid things I did, Mark, were like, I'd employed a PA stroke assistant.
Yeah, yeah.
And she and me worked in my garage, which I'd sort of just put this stud wall up and put a couple of seats in there. And I got three phone lines going in. And I called my bank manager and I said to Nikki, then my assistant, I said, keep that phone ringing. Just keep it going. And all the time I was on the phone to the bank manager, the phone was ringing.
Brilliant.
All you could hear were these different phones going.
Brilliant.
And he actually said to me, you sound really busy. I was like, yeah, phone is ringing off the
Brilliant.
Which, slightly naughty, but, yep. You know, you do what you've got to do.
Yep.
I managed to get funding from the bank. And, you know, I took the risk and it paid off. And with the pharmacy show, then I developed the dentistry show, the veterinary show. You know, oh. I did other medical shows. And I sold that business. I mean, it turned into a big trade show business. I sold it in 2008 to an equity business in a major deal.
Wow.
That was the first big, big sale I'd done.
Can I just stop you there? I mean, this is such a great story. I mean, it's quite often the things that people don't see is like when you're starting out. And, you know, you're talking about hiring big venues. I actually come from a background, we're going back almost 20 years now, where I used to put on nightclub events.
Okay.
And, you know, I was doing it in uni as well. And I was, like, funding my way through uni. But you take the biggest risks. And people don't see that. They see the glamour of this body expo. Or I know we're going to get onto that. Or when I used to do these gigs, there's, like, a couple of thousand people in nightclub. They don't see the struggle where it all started. You're in your garage with your PA trying to drum up some cash flow. People don't see that, do they? The struggle.
Yeah, they forget it. And, you know, at the time it was tough. It was really tough and very stressful. And like I said, I'd got a young family. You know, my daughter had just been born. My wife was not too impressed that I'd, basically left a well-paid job. And I had a company car that went. I couldn't afford to buy myself another car. I mean, I cycled and ran and walked everywhere. Whereas my mates, who were the same age as me, at that time, you know, they'd just come up to 30, middle managers, company cars, they're going out for meals. All of those things, you know, I couldn't do because it was the risk that I took. And
you were on obviously a very nice wage. You could have stayed there, but there was obviously something inside you calling you to go and do this, right? I'm not trying to get too spiritual or anything, but I think as entrepreneurs, we get that feeling and it's like you could play it safe but why, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there'll be people listening that that I would, you know, because when you get into that position, when you're in a well-paid job, it gets comfortable.
Mm.
And, you know, don't get me wrong, I loved the job that I was in. I really enjoyed it. You know, it was something that I was good at, and I liked the people that I worked with. You know, they paid me well. I had share options. You know, you got a pension, all of those things, you know, lunch allowance, they pay for car cleaning, all that, your company car. It's difficult to leave it because actually, you know, that's the trap, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, that you, and it gets more and more difficult to actually take the jump.
Mm.
And I would say to people that, you know, there are two types of people.
Yeah.
That, you know, there are the dreamers who want to start a business, but actually they're not risk takers. And actually, do you know what? It's probably not the right thing for those people to do, because, I mean, I've got, I won't tell you his name, but, you know, really good friend of mine. You know, I went to school with the guy. He's a fantastic, very, very talented, senior job now. And he's always come up with ideas, always says he wants to start his own business. But do you know what? He's not a risk taker.
Sure.
And I've always said to him, do you know, mate, just, you know, you're doing great.
Yeah.
Stick with it, because yeah, you've got a great life anyway. Why risk it? But then there's people who I think that they just need to have a little bit more courage,
yeah,
and take that step. And, you know, the world's your oyster. And sometimes you've got to take a risk, and you've got to be prepared to drop back a few steps.
Yeah.
Take the hit for the bigger win.
I think, you know, for guys listening to this, like, there's going to be a lot of guys over 30, 40s, 50s, and they might be thinking, oh, well, it's a bit too late, et cetera, et cetera. But one thing that Gary Vaynerchuk has said in his, I read his book, Crush It, and that's what got me following him, was, you know, we live in an age where we are so lucky. You can cash in on your passion because we've got this thing called the internet. So if you've got a passion, start talking about it. Set up a Facebook page. Start blogging. If you're listening to this and you've got a passion, a hobby, there's quite a good chance you might be able to monetize on it in this day and age, right, Nick? If you just
absolutely.
And we're not talking about quitting your job or running up, but just do it on the side to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing to point out is, because the internet is there, the world's a small place.
Yeah.
You know, what people fail to do so often is they always look at the domestic market, and they, because it's comfortable, always look at what's around them, what's the easiest thing to do. Do you know what? Actually, the one thing with the internet is that it is so easy to do business in different countries.
Yeah.
Why not look at India or Pakistan or Bangladesh, or, you know, these countries are crying out for certain things. If you can match up what you've got with what they need, then there's no reason why you can't start something internationally.
Yeah.
It has opened up a whole world of opportunity.
Yeah. Oh, it's excellent. Okay, so Nick, you took this big risk, you left the job, but then you obviously set up these shows, and then you sold the business. So you've gone from having a young daughter, your daughter come along, the wife wasn't too happy, but you stuck to your guns. You've developed this trade show. You sold out for quite a lot of money. Must have been pretty life changing, right?
Yeah.
What did the wife say then when you said?
Yeah, she was quite pleased.
I love it. I love it, mate. I love it.
I should give her some credit. She's actually our accountant.
No,
she has done a fantastic job.
My partner is. She's very play it safe and watch the pennies and this, that, and the other. And I try and tell her about my hopes and my dreams for 30 plus men's fitness. And she says, I love it, Treggs, because you're a dreamer and you need to dream big, but I'm always going to be a bit more of a realist. And I think it's quite a nice balance, actually, yeah, to have that, right?
It is good. I mean, I do find it frustrating. I mean, not now, but, you know, I did find it frustrating because, you know, it's like everything gets quashed. It's like, oh, I'm like, yeah, I'm so passionate about this. And then the realism of an accountant is like, well, whoa, hold on a second. I hate to pay for that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, don't worry about that. No, you've got to worry about it.
This is so mirrors me and my missus. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's ringing bells with you, is it, Mark?
Oh, mate, honestly, just the whole story about, you know, you being entrepreneurial in uni, and it was similar for me. And yeah, like you said, with the missus not being too happy with certain risks that you take, you know, you're going on another course again and this and that. And anyway, so you sold up. You're in quite a comfortable position now. You must be sort of mid to late 30s.
Yeah, well, I was 39, actually.
Okay,
When I sold then.
Okay, so you then came up with the idea of body power.
Yeah.
Tell us how the hell that came about, because you could have probably not worked again, right? You could have just put your feet up, but we know.
Yeah, I had a week of retirement and I was so bored.
I love it. I love that, mate. Yeah. I love it, yeah.
It was so boring because, you know, the thing is that, and I don't want to sound like a complete knob now, but, you know, money's great.
Yep.
But do you know what? When all of the people around you and your friends, if they're not in that position, it's completely useless because you sat around thinking, okay, all my mates are at work.
Yeah.
You know, what can you do?
Sure.
So, I had about a week. I had about a week where I was thinking, well, what am I going to do? And yeah. I've got a core team that have been with me for years, and they're absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we had one of our usual sort of brainstorming sessions, and one of the lads called Matt, he said, oh, you know, we should look at bodybuilding. I mean, I didn't know anything about it at all.
Wow.
But I was very into fitness, but running and squash and cycling were my things. So I've always been into sport, and so have all of the guys in the team. So I thought, let's have a look at this. So effectively, I did my research on it. I thought, well, I don't know anything about it, but actually, do you know what? There is something in this. Now, bearing in mind, I'd got lots of experience of doing expos, but I didn't know anything about that market, but it was interesting. I wanted to learn. And I'm very much of the opinion that if you're going to do something, you need ultimate product knowledge. So I will go into the nth degree to understand the market that I'm going into. And actually, as an exhibition organizer, you know, like I said, I started off with the medical things. Well, I mean, now my knowledge is very sketchy, but, you know, dentistry-wise, I knew a lot. Sure. About dentistry. I mean, I really went to town and learned as much as I could so that I could answer any queries. I did the same with pharmacy, did the same with medical, did the same with nursing, you know, and veterinary. Because I'm a real believer, like I say, that you need excellent product knowledge if you're really going to be good at something.
Sure.
And so, you know, where bodybuilding was concerned, myself and the team, we just immersed ourselves into it, and it was a risk because actually no one had done anything like it before. There was no, at the time, there were no big consumer expos for bodybuilding. There were bodybuilding shows, but there weren't big expos. So it was a big risk, really. And most people, in fact, almost everybody, yeah, said, don't be ridiculous. That is not going to work.
Yeah.
But I knew my stuff.
Because bodybuilding was quite underground, wasn't it? It was quite underground.
Yeah, it was very underground. And but the interesting thing was they were enthusiast groups. Now, if you can get in a business an enthusiast group or a real target and a niche, then you are so much more likely to be successful with it. Because if you've got a group of people that are enthusiastic about something, it's so much more feasible to be able to appeal to those people because you know exactly what they want.
Yeah.
So we targeted the bodybuilding community. We knew what they wanted because they were bodybuilding enthusiasts. And then we also brought in other power sport people and groups. So powerlifting, strongman, Olympic lifting. We did combat sports. You know, all of these different sports came together. And we basically put, it was effectively a whole load, probably about 10 different shows all in one, so that we could build up enough people.
Sure.
And the concept was to integrate different power sports so that a strongman could go and see the bodybuilding, a bodybuilder could go and see the combat sports, you know, and it just worked great because the bodybuilders realised that actually some of the training that the martial arts guys were doing would be really good for them.
Mm.
And the martial arts guys were looking at the bodybuilding thinking, oh, do you know what, that's a different way of training, we can try that. So it was really interesting times. It worked great for us.
So the first expo was what year?
2009, right. The first Body Power Expo, yeah.
Right. So how did you actually go about promoting that? Because Facebook was Yeah, I think I was running Facebook ads, maybe just started in 2009, or were you sort of, did you go down the road of Google or leafleting? How did you promote something so big?
That's a really good question, and we decided that rather than, what a lot of companies do, particularly if they've got the funding, and bearing in mind, funding for us wasn't an issue. Yeah. We were in a fortunate position. That's why we were able to put such a big show on straight away.
Yeah.
But I still wanted to obviously be careful with the budget. Now, most big shows like Body Power would go TV, radio, banners, you know, massive spends and try and get in audience like that. We didn't do any of that at all.
Wow. Okay.
Because our market, we knew we were all enthusiasts. And this is what I'm saying about having a niche target. You know where to find your market. You know what they're interested in. So you can target them much more effectively. So we used a combination of digital marketing and traditional marketing. And that balance has changed a little bit over the years. But still, I make sure that we do both traditional and digital. Traditional, and again, just going back to what people don't see, is that, you know, we were going, and I spent hours, days, weeks, in fact, hand-delivering flyers to people.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a bit of guerrilla marketing, which is possibly not the best thing to do nowadays because you get fined. But,
right.
You know, in those days,
fly posting and stuff
like
that.
Fly posting, yeah. It was much more acceptable 10 years
ago. Oh, I've been there and done the lot. Yeah, I've done the lot, Nick. Yeah.
But you know how hard it is to physically, you know, get 200,000 flyers out to homes. It's hard work.
And you were doing that. You were doing the flight.
I was doing that myself with the team.
Yeah, you know, sure.
We would pound the streets, making sure people knew about it.
Yeah.
And we talked to everybody. You know, we did traditional marketing in the sense that we were buying data of, for example, gyms, but also factories where we knew that there were, you know, car factories are classic. So manufacturing was really good because we knew that the majority of those people were guys that were working class guys. Actually, they're our market.
Yeah.
So we did that. We'd go in to see those people. So we did lots and lots of traditional marketing, but literally handballing stuff.
Yeah.
And because we were doing it ourselves rather than using an agency, we could get our passion across for the product.
I love
and
that.
And it made such a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, we worked really hard at trying to engage like-minded people who'd got a network. So, Mike, you'd have been a classic example for us. You know, we'd have gone to you and we'd have said, right, well, you've got clients, so we want you, and then we want you to encourage your clients to come. And that's how we did it. And so we did the traditional marketing in the traditional sense.
Sure.
But we also were very hot on our digital marketing, and Ollie, my partner in the business, really drove that. And we were way ahead of any other expo.
Wow.
That's true. We still are, actually.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of our digital reach. And our Facebook was completely different to what it is now.
But yeah.
Actually, it was better to get a reach because they hadn't limited how many people you could get to, changed, I don't know, 5 years ago maybe. And there weren't so many different platforms out there. So, you know, Facebook was really good for us. But what we did, we started our ambassador team, which has been amazing, actually, in many ways. But what it meant was that we could have a following of, say, 100,000 people.
Yeah.
But actually, we'd got 1,000 people who between them had got millions of followers. And we really looked at, you know, we really targeted people like, let's say, bodybuilding. So Kai Greene, for example, who wasn't really known at all in 2009. You know, we got him over to the show. Nobody really knew who he was. But, you know, we're very respectful of all of the people that help us, you know. So, I'm the sort of person that I never forget people that help me.
Yeah.
And I go out of my way to try and help people. And, you know, I suppose I try and, I mean, I never ask for anything back in return specifically. But what I'm hoping for is that those people will think, you know, he was nice, he was good to me. So
yeah.
I had a great example the other day, actually. Do you know Rich Callender?
Yes.
Rich Callender. So, you know, started Armageddon. Great, you know, really nice guy. I've known him for a number of years now. And he's recently got a slot on Breakfast TV. And I dropped a message saying, Rich, if you want to come and promote anything at Body Power, you know, just let me know, mate. And he came back saying, actually, I'm not sure whether I can make it, but you send me your details, I'm going to promote you. And brilliant. It just, you know, for me, it was like, well, I've got a relationship with this guy that goes back a number of years, and it's just about helping people out. Yeah. It's helping each other.
Building relationships, isn't it?
Yeah, relationship building. And it's really important, you know, so, you know, I've always tried to act with integrity, be honest, be truthful. You know, in the early days, we were saying to people, this is new.
Yeah.
You know, it's a concept, but we believe in it.
Yeah.
So will you believe in it too, you know? So I think for anyone that's starting out in business, you've got to do that because you haven't got anything.
Yeah.
People buy people, and, you know, if you're passionate about what you want to do, and if you've got that product knowledge critically, people will buy into it, and it's much easier to start something off.
I read a great quote recently. It said, people don't buy what you do, people buy why you do it. And I think that's exactly what you said. And again, what a great story of you out, you know, you've sold this business, you could sit back sipping cocktails, but you're out knocking doors and getting in the face of people. And I did flyers in my nightclub days, and I did flyers when I started my personal training business. And I remember getting 5,000 flyers done and going to the nicest areas in Cardiff and just putting them through doors, going to tanning salons, going to gents, barbers. And I actually got my first two clients, which ended up virtually paying my wages for the first 6 months of being self-employed.
Yeah,
fantastic. So it does what you've got to get out there and get in front of people, right?
Yeah, you've just got to go and do it.
So, okay, so the first ever Body Power, how many people did you actually attract in terms of paying customers to
About 8,000 in the first year.
And so, I mean, we don't have to talk profit, but did you get what you wanted? Were you happy with that 8,000?
Yeah, I was really happy. Yeah, I lost money, but I was really happy. But I knew it would lose money.
Yeah.
I like I say, that show, I was in a different position to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't particularly, you know, I knew that I was going to lose money, but I was cool with that.
Okay. You know? Yeah. So, okay, so let's go right up to the current day with Body Power. So, obviously, we know there's a Body Power coming up in May, but let's talk about what it was then in 2007 to what it is now. I mean, how many are you expecting this year? How many did you get last year?
Last year, we got, I think it was like 92,000 visitors.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot. And this year, hopefully, we'll go over 100,000. That's what I'm hoping for. I don't know whether we'll do it or not. It's a big ask, but... It's a lot of people.
Oh my god!
I can tell you that much.
Yeah,
but it's a great show. You know, we could have sold it essentially, but we're not going to. But not going to because I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it, and you know, so do the team. And it's just a great show to work on and to be involved in and see how it's evolving and you know new things and you know the people there and. It's great. It's really good.
Are you finding it a lot easier now to attract big names to come? Everyone sort of queuing up to be on stage
what?
Body Power?
Do you know what? I'll tell you a secret. No. I'm making light of it, but actually, you know, I'm very, very well networked with most of the big names because I've been doing it a long time. So, yeah, I can get to all these people. What I found... What really disappoints me actually is that there are quite a few athletes who basically have used my platform to grow themselves. And then they turn around and they want major fees. And I just think, what are you doing? You know, I just don't book them.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't pay. I mean, I won't tell you who it is, but, you know, some guy who's demanded two business class flights. And I just think, well, you know, if you want to travel, I'm fine with one.
Yeah,
but you know, if you want another one for somebody else, pay for it yourself, mate.
Yeah,
you know,
I want
more bank
and an appearance fee as well.
Yeah. So I mean, I understand it, but I do think sometimes, you know, it's getting a bit out of hand. But there's some very interesting things going on in the fitness industry in terms of athletes. It's really interesting because there's like a new breed of athlete coming through,
right?
And I believe that we will see things going much more mainstream. We've been pushing that way anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, the physique. I think you know there's lots of assisted physiques, which is fine if people want to do that. I see the rise of the natural physique, and I think it's much. I think it's probably where the future is, because sure. actually, when you talk about mainstream, actually mainstream people who are not necessarily in the fitness bubble, the only way we're going to be able to appeal to those people and bring them into fitness and get them healthier and fitter, the only way we're going to be able to do that is to be able to appeal to them, and they're not, they want to see natural physique. So yeah. I see that as a big growth area.
Excellent stuff. Okay, Nick, I know you're busy, man. We're going to talk for another about 10, 15 minutes, if that's all right. I want to talk to you about how, this is really sort of mind-blowing, is you talk about you're off to India tonight, you've come back from China. I know Jamie was out in China for you.
Yeah, he was.
How the hell did you get body power into these countries? I mean, I get excited when I, you know, launch a boot camp in Hereford or Staines or something like that, because
you know
I'm where I am.
Do you know what? It's not that difficult.
No.
Honestly, it's really not that difficult. It's about, again, having the courage of your conviction.
Right.
You know, like I say, the internet's a very amazing tool that brings everything closer. I got into India, actually, do you know what? I knew that it was an area I was going to expand into, because when I was in the pharma industry, I got on really well with Indian doctors and pharmacists. And I thought, well, why not go there? You know, one of the interesting things is when I talk to most people, they have a completely incorrect vision of what some of these countries are like. Mm. And it's because we see images and we're fed information from news. Well, you know, when you start working and going to some of these countries and see what they're like, you just think, well, the news is so biased
yep.
and niche. And, yep. you know, obviously they're picking on stories that are newsworthy. But actually, what happens a lot of the time is that your view of that country is completely skewed.
Yeah.
Take India, for example. And that is a wealthy country.
Sure.
And the cities are beautiful. The infrastructure is incredible. Their 4G is much better than ours is. Their IT infrastructure in general is much better than ours is. There's all the restaurant chains there. There's beautiful hotels. Hospitality is better than anywhere in the world.
Wow.
And then if you combine that with, you know, people want to learn and they're really nice and friendly and positive and optimistic. These places are good to work in.
Yeah.
You know, what can I say? They're actually a pleasure to work in. And, you know, it's a long journey over there, but it's really rewarding when I go there. So I've been in India for just over 5 years now and
wow.
Seen the market change immensely. I have been quite influential on the whole market there, and it's very, very rewarding to see it. And so, you know, that is the country that personally I spend most time
really?
Developing myself, because I like it and I like the country. We're in 29 countries. I don't do them all because I just physically can't. So I've got other team members that
You've
do those.
You've got expos in 29 countries.
No, not expos. No. Events in 29.
Sure.
What we do is our strategy wow. in each country is tailored to those countries. So, for example, we've got countries where there's no point doing an expo because the market's not there for an expo.
Right.
But actually, there's a market there for fitness clothing, and they buy into our brand, and so we sell clothing there. Then there's other countries where actually we're focusing really on nutrition products rather than anything else. And, you know, there's countries where actually we're just interested in gym franchise.
Wow. Wow.
It all depends on the country, because they are different. They've got different needs. They're at different stages in the market development. It's just about learning what people want and what the market requirements are.
It's really insightful. Really insightful, Nick. Okay, so look, we've spoken a lot about business. Now, you know, I often say to people, you know, everyone gets the same sort of time. Everyone gets the same 24 hours in a day. People can make excuses, or they're going to find a way or an excuse. Now, you sound like you've got an awful lot on. It also sounds like you've got a great team. But what is an average day like for you?
For me? It's crazy, mate.
Yeah. yeah.
No, seriously. It's my average day is it's full of meetings,
yeah.
Calls. My days are planned to fit in the different time zones. So, you know, I will, first thing in the morning, I'm talking to the East, then middle day, it's Europe, and then, I'm generalizing now, but Europe, and then yep. later on towards the end of the day, I'm talking to the West, like North America. That's largely governed by time zones. So that's the first thing that sort of plans out what I do. And then I get pulled around quite a lot because I've got lots of different interests. I'm not just involved in body power, I've got different investments. So I've got differing amounts of involvement in those. Some I am literally just there as an advisor and I won't get too involved. Others I'm much more involved in. No additional investments have daily requirements for me.
Sure.
But you know, collectively, I've got 40 or 50 partnerships, businesses, investments going on.
Wow.
So it is a lot to manage.
Yeah.
And so I do that with a team, and I've got a great setup so that I'm able to do that. I found that, you know, I'm really into being as efficient as possible. So
yeah.
I like to produce as much as possible because that's the best way to run multiple businesses. So I lean heavily on assistants and colleagues so that, you know, they can look after bits of the business and, you know, I'm keen to let them crack on
sure.
and do things.
What about your own sort of personal time and also family time? Because how many kids do you have? Nick?
I've got two. I've got an 18-year-old and a 16-year-old boy.
Right. Okay. So 18-year-old girl and 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
So how do you balance your own sort of health and fitness? Because I know you do a lot of endurance runs. How do you manage family time? Because it's something I've got two boys under the age of four, and I'm a very hands-on dad, but I do find it very hard to juggle everything. I think we all do.
Well, let me tell you that two under fours is hard work,
yeah.
as you probably know,
yeah.
and it does get easier. So,
it does.
You know, I've got 16 and 18. It is a different kettle of fish, really, with
yeah.
Kids at that old. But obviously, it's still important to have family time. Do you know what? I do it like this. It sounds almost heartless, but I treat it as part of my working day.
I totally get it.
Yeah, so that I know that one of the things I have to do during the day is have family time.
Yeah.
So I'm an early starter. So I like to be at my desk around 7-ish, and I find that a very productive time. But I don't finish particularly late. You know, I'll leave the office about 5:30, 6, and I only live 10 minutes away.
Brilliant.
So I get back, you know, we have dinner together, and then I will, you know, walk the dog, have more family time, maybe watch something on TV. But I'm available on phone as
right.
well. So
right.
I am always available. And that's the way I do it. In terms of fitness, obviously, you know, running a fitness business, I completely appreciate fitness is all important. So I'm very lucky that I've got a gym at the bottom of my office. So, you know, we've got the Body Power gym right here. It's a brilliant facility and a lot of the team use it. So I will use it in the day, and if I'm really rushed, I'll have meetings in there. So it's
yep.
not unheard of for me to have a meeting while I'm on the Watt bike.
Brilliant.
And
I heard
to
it.
Sit next to me.
Fantastic.
Embarrassing, really. But, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do,
right? Multitasking. And, you know, what you say there about you fit the family time in, and it sounds quite – I don't think that is at all. I think that, a lot of business owners that I speak to, they find it quite a massive juggling act. So if you actually say, well, when I go home, this is what I do – these are my dedicated hours. Like, I've started to try and do that. As soon as I walk in, the phone goes off, no social media. I do find it hard, but that is factored in. That is my time. So, for instance, when I finished coaching on Saturday, I took the kids to the park for 5 hours, but I handed my partner my phone and said, no, have it. I don't want any kind. I want to be totally present. But it's a challenge, right? Because I think that when we run business, our brain is always going. Would you say you find it very hard to switch off?
I don't switch off.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but again, I think a lot of people will say to me, let's say I go on holiday, they're like,
yeah.
no, I'm not going to send you anything because you're on holiday. I'm like, no, send it.
Send it me.
I will choose when I look at it, but I want to be kept informed. So I will always on holiday check my phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I make no bones about it, but I just don't check it as regularly. I check it once when it suits me. And I'm fine with that, you know, but some people go, what, you're on holiday though?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, but. Do you know what? I like what I do. I enjoy it. So it's not a problem for me. And if I don't want to look at my phone, I won't look at it.
Nick, you know? When I was walking along and I listened to you and Jamie both talking about this, and it was so refreshing because I think we're always very critical. And my partner would say to me, oh, you're on your laptop on holiday. I'll just say, look, I just need an hour. Just need to queue up some emails, check in with the online groups. And actually, what people do find hard to understand is that we actually don't want to switch off because we really fucking enjoy what we do. Like, it is our passion. And I find it like I cannot wait when I wake up in the morning after I've done the school run to get my laptop up to check what's going on, you know, because I love it. And a lot of people who don't enjoy their jobs, don't enjoy a day-to-day up, they don't get it. But I'm exactly the same on holiday, and you beat yourself up a little bit, but it was really refreshing to hear.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, and I think you know, again, the older you get, the less you get about people telling you to.
Yeah.
But it is frustrating that people will say, oh, you know, you should just chill out. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah. Yeah, this is my chilling out. I chill out when I go to sleep.
Like,
yeah,
it.
I'm happy.
Should
yeah.
I chill out.
Absolutely. Brilliant. Okay, I'm gonna ask for 3 minutes of your time. Nick.
Okay.
It's been really, I've got so much value from it. I really appreciate it. I'm buzzing. I really am buzzing. So I'm going to be really selfish here. What tips will you give me to turn 30 plus men's fitness into a global business in the next 10 years?
Well, first, I think you're obviously doing a great job, and you clearly you enjoy it. And it's great to see that you've started something that's niche. And I'm quite sure that, you know, with your level of enthusiasm, people are going to like to engage with you. So it is really good to see. Well done on getting it so far.
Thank you.
In terms of turning it into a global business, you know, you're the it's just there, waiting there for you. You know, you can reach out to different countries really easily, but you know, you do need to do things in a staged approach. You can't just go for everything straight away, of course,
sure,
because then things become unmanageable. People tend to be too impatient.
Yep.
You know, and I am one of those people because I'm a very impatient person. You know, I would like to get stuff done as fast as possible. So I don't want to be a hypocrite, but at the same time, you know, you do need to be in the right position to be able to then reach out globally and start to develop the business like that. But I you know, you've got an area of business which is massive, and so I don't see any reason why you can't reach out internationally. What would help you is that you form partnerships.
Yep, that's what I think.
You know, I'm big on partnerships and working together so that you've got mutual benefits. You know, doing the right partnership is critical, of course. Don't try and drill a partner down so that it's all in your favour, because it's just not going to work.
Sure.
And just on that, one quick pointer is that I'll always try and deliver more to my partner than my partners can deliver to me.
Right.
You know, and you'll have heard it before, but
yep,
it's really, really important you try and do that. It's about, you know, for you to get international growth, you're going to need to do research. You need to see who's got groups and, you know, who's networked in different countries. Which countries have you got where there's no language barrier? Which countries have you got where there's a niche? Where there's a need? And once you start reaching out to people and saying, look, this is what I do in the UK, how about we work together? Then I think you'll start to form some really good strategic partnerships. And dare I say it, I bet that within your group, you know, the people that are listening now, you will have people there who have got fantastic links and contacts. And, you know, going back to what I was saying earlier, Mark, about, you know, you scratch my back, I scratch yours, but not in any formal way. It's just that's the way we do things.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure that you're the sort of person that people will want to help. And so, you know, your listeners probably have got contacts abroad. Do you know, I had this really... I did a post ages ago on my Facebook page, and because I got this idea about doing a West End play. I wanted to do a fitness-related West End play.
Wow,
it's one of the things I want to deliver at some point. Anyway, so I just thought, I'll just post out, seeing if anybody knows anyone that's in theatre. Well, I was amazed.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. I had a whole load of messages saying, produce this, produce that, act in this,
incredible,
I can help you with this. And I just thought, wow.
It's already
that's
there.
Amazing, yeah. All you got to do is ask. And, you know, if you're a nice guy like you are, I think you'll find that you're going to get lots of help from people that want to help you.
Really appreciate that, Nick. Really appreciate that. Okay, before we wrap up, just want to give the guys one little bit more value. For any guys listening to this that might be stuck in their job, they're not too happy, but they've got a family, they're worried about, you know, bills to pay, and but they might have a hobby or a passion, something that they could do on a sideline. What bit of enthusiasm, what would you say to them just to give them a bit of a kick to go and try and change things?
Well, it's not one easy answer, but what I would say is, look, if you're not enjoying your job, change it.
Yeah.
Just change it, because, you know, life's about living. It's about enjoying things. You shouldn't go to a job just because you've got to. You know, there's lots of opportunity for people. So, you know, if you're in that boat and you've got an idea, have the courage of your conviction, make the step, and just do it.
Brilliant.
That's the best thing I can say.
Really appreciate it. Nick, you've given me a little bit more than you said you could. So I really appreciate that. I know you're
it's
a busy
a
man. He's got a fitness model waiting to meet him in reception, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's training downstairs, being filmed. So
brilliant.
Yeah, I better go see him.
And then you're off to India tonight.
Tomorrow night.
Brilliant.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
Just a quick one. Just give the show I mentioned, the Body Power, coming up in May, and where people can get tickets and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it's the 12th, 13th, 14th of May. If you've not been and you're interested in fitness or getting fit or learning about fitness or training, then come along, because you'll have a fantastic day out. It's open Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's at the NEC. And if you want to find out more details about it, it's on bodypower.com.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I'll post all the links below. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
thanks very much.
Brilliant. Okay, guys, so that was episode 20 of 30 Plus. Men's Fitness Podcast. Was really, really over the moon to be joined by Nick Horton, the CEO of Body Power. He's off now to go and meet a fitness model, and I'm off back into coaching in the gym. So guys, I really hope you liked it. If you did, give us a like, give us a share, leave us a review on iTunes, and I'll be back soon with another episode of the podcast. Keep trucking, fellas. I'll talk to you soon.